the bunker today in Mount Vernon. Glad to be with you guys today. I have not been with you live for the past couple of weeks. There have been several hiccups along the way, and so we're glad to be back with you today. We're thankful that Brother Suthoff over there in Calhoun, Tennessee, has been running the controls and is able to put something up there in my stead whenever I'm not here. And so we're grateful for that. Last weekend, we had the opportunity during our Make Me a Servant workshop to hear a great update, as it were, on the Gospel Radio Network and her progress and the future, what she holds for the rest of us listeners. And we were kind of let down, I guess, because the weather really kinked things up for a few people. Brother Suthoff wasn't able to make it because of the weather. He actually struck out and had to turn around and go back home. And so, you know, safety obviously comes first. We're glad that he stayed safe. But anyway, he wasn't able to come, and he was going to actually give the updated material, tell us about IP address hits around the world and stats and all kinds of different things. So we were looking forward to that. And so then when he wasn't able to come, and we did find out probably Thursday-ish, I guess. And so we said, well, you know, Brother Ryan, he and his family are coming, so maybe we can get him to do it. Well, I guess it was Friday. He made the decision that they were not going to be able to make it, just the roads between here and there. He's about 6 hours from here. So Brother Chris, one of our good elders, he got a text, and he basically addressed us all during the lunch hour about the success of TGRN, the things that are to come. He told us about a few broadcasting opportunities that are in the future. And so we were tickled about that. It was a good update, somewhat abbreviated, I guess. But every year we try to give that update about TGRN and how she has progressed and financial stability and all of that. So we're grateful to know that she's still pumping out the gospel 24 hours a day. And we appreciate folks like David Suthoff and Ryan Smithy continuing to aid us in that. So here we go. Here it is. My stars. Look at this. February the 11th. Valentine's Day right around the corner. Leprechaun Day coming right after that, right? I mean, it's fixing to be summer again. Isn't that awesome? But anyway, I think March, isn't it? A couple of weeks into March, we actually throw the switch on the daylight savings time. So that's right around the corner. Start having some later sunsets, which is certainly helpful. But anyway, look forward to all those things that are in our future if the Lord allows. So kind of feel rusty not being in here for a couple of weeks, but let me not forget to welcome you. Because without you, there is no radio network. So thank you for joining us. I know my adoring wife is following along today. She's listening as she scurries about doing her things there at the house. She has been quite ill, and she has morphed from acute bronchitis into pneumonia and continues to test negative for the dreaded China virus, but just has been very sick. And so I love you, baby, and I hope you feel better today, better than you did yesterday, we hope. But thank you for listening. I know my mother is listening today from her newly sold property in Brentwood, Tennessee. And we're grateful that you're here, and just got off the phone with her a little bit. She's doing well, and so love you very much. Hope your day is phenomenal. I know my buddy Michael is listening right around the corner from this great establishment as he gets his day going. And love you, brother. And look forward to this weekend, worshiping together in spirit and in truth. So lots of folks listening. We have first responders that listen on a regular basis. Today's usually the day when one of our deacons, Eric, is traveling home from Sunnyvale, and he tunes in normally on his drive-in. So howdy, brother. Hey, you left your jacket in the fellowship hall, by the way. Anyway, he's coming in. Brad's out there. Brad's studying for a big exam, and so appreciate him and the work he does. I guess it's in the Garland area. Our guys are everywhere. Andy's out there, you know, in Lancaster. We got guys down in Tyler. We got Kobe and Kaysen that are boogieing around, helping everybody. There's a lot of our men that are first responders. Your announcer, Brian Gurley, he's a first responder. So we love these guys and what they do for us, but thank you for listening as often as you do and supporting this network. We got folks just all over the place that are listening. And a special thanks, I think, should be always stated for those of you that are homeschooling that choose to use, you know, the Monday through Friday mornings for the Master program in your devotion. Thank you. Thank you for trusting us with the teaching of the gospel during your devotional time. We don't have a whole lot of things on the bulletin board, but I know there's some things happening. Yesterday at our preacher's luncheon, preachers and leaders luncheon officially, Brother Grota mentioned that they have a meeting coming up in March, and I failed to write that down on my hand or otherwise. So I'll be bringing that to you just as quick as I can. I sent him a text this morning, hadn't got a response yet. He's a busy young feller anyway. But I do know about this gospel singing that's taking place up at DeKalb. And we've got a new young fella that has come to town up here to fill their pulpit. Daniel Lang is now preaching for the DeKalb Church of Christ, and we look forward to having the opportunity to meet him. He wanted to come to the leaders' luncheon yesterday, and he texted and said they're still moving in and unloading boxes and sorting and whatnot, and boy, I completely get that, don't we, Jody? But anyway, they're still getting moved in and weren't able to make it. So if you can make it, February the 25th, between 7 and 9:30, it says that refreshments are going to be provided. But if you can make it up there for that event, get to meet the Lang family and settle in for a night of singing, you'll be blessed by that, certainly. And we'll continue to announce that until the day comes. Here locally, March 18th. I don't have my flyer in here, so I'm working off of my incredible memory. March 18th, 5 o'clock, at the Home of Recovery in Winsboro, Texas. We're having a supper followed by a singing. So a supper singing we're going to have down there. And if you're going to be able to attend, please reach out and let us know, because we need to RSVP as quickly as possible to know how much seating we're going to need, how much food we're going to need. And men, if you are interested in leading a song, we need to know which songs you would like to lead. We're going to load them digitally, I think, and have them displayed on the screen. That way we're not lugging a bunch of books around, and we're going to get all new age on ya. So anyway, that's coming up March the 18th. Again, locally, we've got March the 9th. We've got Marvin Witt that is driving up from the Austin area, the Cherokee area, and he's coming to tell us about the Cherokee Home the children's home and bring us up to speed on the great work that's going on there. So local members, you can look forward to that opportunity. Lots of things going on. Just stay tuned. And if you have an event out there, if you're listening and your congregation has an event coming up, send us a flyer. You can email us here at mornings@tgrn.org. You can call us here at the studio, 903-537-4129. You can call us and we can, get to you that way. But let us, aid you if you want in getting that message out. I think that's all I've got. If I've forgotten anything, then please forgive me. But February's moving pretty rapidly, isn't it? We have a great speaker coming to us next weekend, the 20th. Brother Paul Baker is going to be preaching as he is raising support to go to the newly established Texas School of Preaching. And he'll be here on the 20th to preach the gospel that morning and let us get to know him a little bit as we prepare to support him as he begins that great training process. Our good brother Terrence Dendy is going to be part of the leadership down there, and we really look forward to that. Terrence is he's a giant in the brotherhood, physically and spiritually. We love us some Terrence Dendy. He's one of our normal speakers every Tuesday night about 7 o'clock. So we love Terrence, and look forward to having him back here in our area again. But anyway, as we get into our Bible study, we're in Matthew chapter 10. Since it's been a couple of weeks, you might have forgotten where we are, but Matthew chapter 10, pick up in verse 9 here in a moment. But we got to have that sip of Folgers. So here we go. Nice fresh cup I made before coming into the studio. All right, so when we left off weeks ago, whenever that was, now I can't even remember, we had just begun the section beginning at verse 9 of chapter 10 of Matthew about how they were to carry out their limited commission. Limited in scope, they would go only to the Jews. Again, this was God's intent from the foundation of time. That is, they would have first opportunity through the prophets, the great teachings of those men of old. They had been told about the coming kingdom that would last forever. Daniel 2, verse 44, they had been told about this great teaching body that would start in Jerusalem, Isaiah 2, verses 1 through 4. They knew about that. They also, from Isaiah's account, knew that Messiah would be born of a virgin, even from Bethlehem Ephrathah. And so this goes back into chapter 7 of the great work of Isaiah. And so they had been told additionally by Isaiah. And remember, this is, 700, 725, 750 years perhaps prior to Jesus coming in the fullness of time, as Paul states by inspiration at Galatians 4:4. They knew about that. And so they, knowing of the Messiah and his arrival, knowing about the Prince of Peace, Isaiah 9:6, knowing about the great covenant mentioned at Jeremiah 31, they should have been ready to receive the gospel. And so they were the first recipients of the great teaching, even of John the Baptizer, who would himself break 400 years of silence, even from above, the end of Malachi to John the Baptizer. They would hear that message first. Jesus the Christ, the anointed of God, he would do the same thing. So here, as these men are being sent out, they are going in a limited way. That's why it's called the limited commission. They out and back, as it were, And I've often taught it this way. I hope I'm not wrong, but a great faith building exercise that this would be. We don't do much of this today, and shame on us, but we need to be those that are going out and knocking doors and raising interest, piquing men's interest. Those of you that are listening that are local, you remember our opportunities that we've had in the not-too-distant past where we're a little amped up, a little little hypersensitive at the beginning of the morning. We're not sure exactly what streets we're going to be on and who might answer the doors. And so we go out, and there's much energy. There's much activity. We have teams that are crossing each other's paths, you know, in crossroads here in the city, and they're beginning to tell their stories. Well, at the end of the knocking experience, whatever time that may be, when we come back together, the excitement that swells among the faithful number here. Man, I ran into this girl, and she didn't even have a Bible. We're going back here in a few minutes, and we're going to give her a Bible, be her very first Bible. We met a couple that slammed the door in her face. There's all kinds of stories, and the excitement, it's off the chain. It's almost like an adrenaline rush when we come back together. And so here, as they're going out, I can kind of, I hope, put myself in their shoes because I felt the same type of energy. Jesus is carrying forth this great mission in them. They're going to be his hands and feet and eyes and mouth and ears. And so he's sending them out, and he's told them not to take gold or silver or brass in their purse. You don't need a pile of money. No script for your journey, neither two coats, neither shoes, staves, verse number 9. And so we're going to learn to rely on God. We're going to learn to rely on those who are worthy, right? That's the way it works in the kingdom even today. We rely on one on another. You know, a preacher comes to town and we put him up in one of the members' houses, or we make sure that he's got a comfortable room at a lodging facility. We've done that for the brother that's coming in May. We've already made arrangements for him so that he'll be ably taken care of while he's here. We're starting to make plans to feed him and his wife while they're here. Lots of good things that are happening, but that's our responsibility to take care one of another. Continuing verse 11, last time we were together, and into whatsoever city or town you shall enter, inquire who in it is worthy, and there abide till you go thence. And further, and when you come into an house, salute it, and if the house be worthy, let your peace come upon it, but if it be not worthy, let your peace return to you. And so when you go into a area, a neighborhood, a community, however you want to express that, you need a place to set up shop. I remember back, and I hate to just keep telling personal stories, but in the year 2000, we packed up at the School of Preaching in Memphis and drove to Nashville for a campaign. It was kind of a last-minute thing there around the Coliseum in Nashville. And anyway, when we arrived, one of the local brethren had made sure that the church building was going to be wide open for us and had places for us to stay, you know, members' houses and such. They had very ably taken care of us. And so had set up headquarters before we went out, before we went down to the stadium. We had to look at the map of the stadium, trying to figure out, you know, where we would stand, where all the entrances are, so we know where the mass amount of people would be, etc. So when you go into a town, find a worthy house. And if it's truly worthy, then give honor to whom honor is due. And if it's not, then go elsewhere and, you know, find a place that is worthy indeed. Verse 14, and whosoever shall not receive you nor hear your words when you depart out of that house or city, shake off the dust of your feet. Again, we talked about this last time we were together because I remember talking about customs, and this was the idea of shaking off certain pollutions from their feet. I think we referenced the brother that said, it has been said that the Jews considered their land so peculiar holy that when they returned home from any heathen country, they stopped at the borders and shook or wiped the dust from their feet so that the Holy Land might not be polluted by it. And so here when Jesus says this, it would show that the Jews who rejected Jesus' teaching, even through these great messengers, it was no longer holy. You would remember that sometime later, Jesus would tell these Jews, these Pharisees especially, your temple has been left to you desolate. You know, God had left that location sometime back. Remember that Jesus found the money changers, even in the court of the temple, and would drive them out with a small whip that he had made. And so that was a problem. So the allusion that Jesus uses here about shaking the dust off your feet, we may not understand that, but it was specific to them in that culture, and they would understand. They would think, perhaps, you know, well, how dare you? But it was a serious matter, certainly. Verse 15, verily I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city, the city where you had to shake the dust off your feet. You know, all of us really, as you look at passages like Revelation 14, 13, where we find those words, and their works do follow them, we are judged based on opportunities, I guess is a good way to put that. We're judged according to opportunities. And so we pray for opportunities. And so then God provides us with opportunities, but what do we do with those opportunities? You know, I think about Cornelius in Acts chapter 10. The Bible tells us very specifically there in that passage, by inspiration, Luke writes about Cornelius and tells us that he was a man that prayed to God. Well, as we think about God's answer in rounding up Peter and having Peter go to Cornelius, I know what Cornelius was praying because God answers prayers. And so for the opportunities that are put before you, what do you do with them? Cornelius, he welcomed the answered prayer. And he made sure that his men went and got the messenger post haste. And then when the message came, he told Peter, he said, we are all here to hear what you have to say this day. And so what a beautiful thought as you think about an opportunity that was given Cornelius and his whole household. And boy, they jumped on it with both feet. Hopefully we do the same thing, because as I was hoping to make the point, we are going to be judged on our opportunities. Now, as Sodom and Gomorrah were invoked here, please remember these wicked people, they were hyper evil. I mean, I don't even know any other way to put it. It's pretty specific in the Bible as you read about them, Genesis 19, about their wickedness. Man. And so they're invoked here. Notice this crazy evil city of Sodom and Gomorrah, they didn't have the opportunity that these Jews would have. Now, it's not to say that they were without opportunity, but the fact remains, there's always opportunity. As long as you have breath in your lungs, you can confess, you can repent, you can pray, you can make the decision to be immersed so that God can take your sins away and certainly the guilt and all that garbage that goes along with it. The answer of a clean conscience, 1 Peter 3:21, added to the church, the one church that Jesus built, Acts 2 and verse 47. There's always opportunity. What are you doing with your opportunities? These Jews had ample opportunity. And so it would be rougher on them than it would be even on Sodom and Gomorrah. That's the point there. Well, as we come into verse number 16, we have even a blessing that is pronounced upon them. And so the master teacher, Jesus, he's going to tell them, I'll be with you. And so he is going to tell them about this great guidance that is going to be provided for them, even in a supernatural fashion. Verse 16, behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves, for be you therefore, wise as serpents and harmless as doves. So Jesus was sending them forth as sheep into a horrible world. And the same thing was preached on the day of Pentecost. You remember there in Acts 2, save yourselves from this untoward generation, this evil generation. Save yourselves, right? Paul tells the Ephesians and others that we're called out of darkness, right? The world is filled with darkness. And this was the world, even then, that these individuals were being sent into. One wolf that's amidst the flock of sheep can result in a lot of danger, a lot of slaughter, a lot of carnage, you might say. And so it just takes one to cause a lot of problems. And so here is a sheep going into a flock of wolves, you might say. Very, very dangerous. Very dangerous indeed. And so sheep are often characterized as innocent and harmless. You think about the Lamb of God, John 1, that taketh away the sins of the world. Think about the Lamb of God, the worthy Lamb, Revelation 5. The Lamb as a Lamb, Isaiah 53. The go dumb before his shearers. Lots of great allusions in the Bible to this particular beast. You and I, as members of the kingdom, we are always referred to as the sheep of his pasture. And so that makes Jesus the chief shepherd. Beautiful, beautiful picture indeed. And so there is a warning that is expressed here. And so he tells them to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. You know, serpents, the word here, I believe, has something to do, or maybe comes from a root word. I probably should have looked that up, but if my memory serves me correctly, something like python. And so you get the idea of the enormity of this particular picture that's being painted here. And so wise as serpents, you know, the serpent was considered a symbol of wisdom among the ancients. Trying to think of the passage, and it's escaped me. Hate when that happens, Numbers. But you remember when Israel had failed God again there in the wilderness, and God sent vipers among them to begin biting and devouring them. Moses, in his interceding fashion, went to God and said, please, please forgive this people. Stop this horrible plague immediately. And so you remember God said, if you'll make a staff that has a brazen serpent on it, everyone that looks upon it shall be saved from this plague. Well, again, there's your image that pops up again. The idea of wisdom seen over and again in the scriptures, and certainly to the ancients. We're told, even by Brother Kaufman in his commentary here of Matthew 10, the maid at Philippi who followed Paul and Silas was said to have had a spirit of divination, but the Greek word even shows us this idea, and there's this idea again of Python. And so the Egyptians, they used the serpent in their hieroglyphics many times, as history shows us. And it was a symbol of wisdom. That's how it was to be interpreted. Probably the thing in which Jesus directed his followers to imitate the serpent was in its caution in avoiding danger. You know, no animal equals them in their rapid ability, their rapid skills from escaping danger. How many times have you swatted at a snake, and whew, they're gone, and you're looking all over the place? You know, where'd the snake go? Maybe that's got something to do with this particular illusion. But harmless as doves, you know, we have seen in days gone by. My wife and I, we love bird feeders. And so a lot of the feed falls to the ground, obviously. And many times we notice that the doves, those little ring-neck doves and others, they don't get on the feeders. They feed off of the ground. Well, amazingly, they're the ones that always get hit by the cats, you know. There's a certain knowledge that we have about doves. You know, you see them strutting around on the ground and eating the breadcrumbs that we throw, and they release doves, you know, at weddings and other places. And so there's a mindset that you and I both have about the doves. And so there's a calmness of spirit. There is, you know, no, when you see doves come into the yard, you don't run and hide because you know there's going to be no harm done, you know. And so in this allusion that God states to them, it would have certainly meant something heavy, something that they could understand easily because of the day and the time and the use of these images. Beginning of verse 17, but beware of men. Now this follows the wise as serpents and harmless as doves. This is what you are to behave like. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to the councils, and they will scourge you in their synagogues. And you should be brought before governors and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them and the Gentiles. So, seemingly here by mentioning the synagogues as a place of some of their troubles, Jesus is implying, I believe, that the Jewish religious leaders, they would be the ones that would be doing most of this persecution. And certainly that's sad, but do you remember the day that Jesus had? The event that begins at the top of John 19? Scourged him, mocked him, spit on him, beat him, crucified him. That was the Jewish leaders. They say, oh, no, it was a Roman government. No, it was the Jewish leaders. It was the ones standing there demanding crucify him. as though nothing has changed. This would be something that they would face on a daily basis. So for the first several years, even of the church, the persecution came almost entirely from the Jewish people, the very people who had been specially prepared to receive the gospel. And they were the ones. We have a light moment as often as we can there at the jail when we tell the young men, you know, there's these great crescendos, certainly throughout the book of Acts. You know, many were added to the kingdom, many men and women. And then you'll see, but the Jews, right? They're always the wet dish rag there. They're the ones that try to stamp everything. What was it, 14 of Acts? Remember chapter 14 when Paul would leave their presence and go to the next city to preach? Who followed him? The Jews. Who would encourage the beating, the stoning of Paul? The Jews. And so they should have known, but they rejected Jesus, and they rejected the message. Now, the councils, the Sanhedrin, as it were, this is a reference to the Jewish powers. And so the scourging that would be administered even in the synagogues, this was from the Jewish leaders. And now don't fool yourself. When you think about The Passion, that Mel Gibson movie, I have a few issues with that particular movie, and I certainly have an issue with Mel Gibson, but I think most of us probably watched that, and as we think back about it now, our skin crawls. When I watched it, I could not believe the amount of blood that was on the ground around the scourging pole. Maybe an exaggeration, maybe not. Scourging was a horrible, horrible beating. And if you remember from the movie, I do believe it was pretty accurate, the choice of beating utensils. There were several that they could choose from there at the scourging post. Some of them had what appeared to be like meat hooks. Some of them had, you know, these big iron balls on them. You know, they would break ribs, tear flesh. I've heard, I've read historical events, writings rather, that told that a great majority, not all, but a great majority of people often died at the scourging pole. The skin was ripped from the body. Organs are manifested before your eyes. Lungs are punctured. Kidneys, liver. Not so, there's only so much that the heart can take. It's horrible to even think about, but he's warning them about the scourgings that will come. He said, you can expect this. And so, as you think about the horrible things that would come, you know, Jesus has always been good to tell us about those things that are in front of us, and we're grateful for that. You think about hell. God's been very specific about what lies ahead of us if we are disobedient. 2 Thessalonians 1, beginning of verse 7, tells us that there's a special place prepared for those that know not God and for those that obey not the gospel. It's a scary thing It's a scary thing indeed, but we've been told about those things that are in the future. We've been told that there's coming a day that he's going to end all of this. And that's the furtherance of 2 Peter 3 as the book closes. So God always wants you to know what's ahead of you. And his son, the master teacher, our king and redeemer, he's the very same. And so he's telling them, this is what you can expect. Don't be surprised when, kind of a thing. Verse 19, beginning, but when they deliver you up, take no thought how or what ye shall speak, for it shall be given you in that same hour what ye shall speak. For it is not ye that speak, but the Spirit of your Father which speaketh in you. Man, this is one of the strongest statements in the New Testament affirming the inspiration of the apostles. You're going to be given the words. You know, in kind of a, well, not really a similar way, but man, I'm just spitballing here. When we go door knocking, when we have phone conversations, when we have the opportunity to speak for Jesus, he's given us the words. Now, don't start sending me crazy emails. I'm not talking about supernaturally. Not really. Because he's supernaturally preserved the Bible, and we have it today to study, to digest, to memorize, to speak. And so he's given us the words. Peter tells us to be ready always to give an answer. And the only way that happens is as we study to show ourselves approved. And so we've been given the words, you might say. Theirs, obviously, was supernatural. It would be coming through direct inspiration. And that was certainly a comfort. How many times have you personally been nervous in a situation? Someone's asked you a question and you didn't know. Well, I'll get back to you on that. Just let me think about that. Or maybe mistakenly you've just uttered something that you weren't sure was true at all, just because you were embarrassed not being able to give an answer. These men, they didn't have that problem. Whatever corner they may have been backed into by the opposing powers, Jesus would speak through them. Jesus would speak through them. And so this was a supernatural event, and it would be a comfort to them. Don't worry. He says, take no thought. That is, be not anxious, because I'm there with you. So many times Jesus tells us that he's there to comfort us. Some of the last words of Matthew 28. Lo, I'm with you always, even until the end of the age. So many times we are comforted knowing that he is there with us. The moments when we get anxious, when we find ourselves in emotional upheaval, it's the moments in time that we have realized that we should have been dependent on God. Instead of running around like a chicken with a head cut off, the sky's falling, sky's falling, sky's falling, we should have been on our knees talking to the creator of the universe, the master of humanity. We err in that way. And so, take no thought. Be not anxious, because I'm with you. And notice, but the Spirit of your Father, which speaketh in you. You know, this is certainly a reflection, I think, of Paul's great confidence that he had in the gospel. You know, as he began that Roman letter, we know it so very well at verses 16 and 17, the power of God is in the gospel. It's not in the speaker. Now, certainly some are very eloquent in their speech, the young man that we've got coming here in May to preach the gospel. Very eloquent in his speech. Well, that didn't just happen by accident. He didn't have some supernatural osmosis experience. He's trained to be that way. He's recorded probably thousands of hours of video and audio. And so the reason that he is such an eloquent speaker is because he's honed that talent. God gave him five talents, and he is already producing double that. We have that responsibility as well. God will speak through you, but you've got to digest his word so that you'll have those words to speak. Be not anxious. God does not want us to be an anxious people. Many mistakes are made in anxious moments. Emotions flare, feelings swell, and sometimes we're not able to hold our tongue or control our tongue to say the right things. He goes on in verse number 20. Wow, we're almost 10 minutes till. He goes on in verse 21 beginning, talking about even more, you know, problems that are coming, persecution. He wants them to know they need to press on, they need to persevere. Verse 21 says, "And the brother shall deliver up the brother to death, and the father the child, and the children shall rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death." The ties between brother and sister and parent and child, they're so strong. It seems often that nothing would ever be able to break that bond and, you know, cause one to turn against the other. Nothing else but this dreadful opposition to God and his gospel has ever induced or ever can induce any man to violate the most tender relations and even consign the best friends to torture, flames, scourgings. It adds to the horrors of this that those who were put to death in persecution were tormented in the most awful modes that human ingenuity could devise. They were crucified. They were thrown into boiling water. They were burned at the stake. They were roasted slowly over coals. They were compelled to drink melted lead. They were torn in pieces by beasts of prey. They were covered with pitch and set on fire. Yet, incredible as it seems, parents and children, husbands and wives, were found wicked enough to deliver up each other to these cruel modes of death on account of attachment to the gospel. Such is the opposition of the heart of man to the gospel. Well, tell you what, this is not necessarily breakfast material, but as Mr. Barnes has pointed out in this quote that I just read, there were some frightful days ahead of them. And so because of the gospel, there would be troublesome times. Verse 22, "And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake. But he that endureth to the end shall be saved." I don't know how many times I've personally used that in sermons. This is similar to the admonition of Revelation 2 and verse 10. Endurance to the end. No matter, again, context, no matter the persecution, the suffering, the mayhem that ensues around you, the torture, the hatred, faithful unto death. this hatred of the gospel, this hatred of the gospel's converts, Christians, God's adopted children, the heritage of God, the kingdom, the redeemed, the hatred. It's like nothing that man has ever known. You say, oh, well, what about the Holocaust? Yes, that was horrible. What about World War? You know, yes, there's all kinds of horrible things that are seen with hatred. But ultimately, when you think about that, when you get right down to the brass tacks, we're talking about man hating man, aren't we? One race hating another race. One country hating another country. But when we get into the topic of being the enemies of the cross, friends, we have morphed to another level. Those that hate God, hate His supernaturally preserved holy word and His messengers. Friends, that's a whole new level of hate. That's something that should never be. Truly, man should not hate man. But man should never hate God or His messengers. You know, as you get to the toward the end of Hebrews 11, the Bible tells us about many that served God faithfully. And by inspiration there, the writer, whomever it may be, says, of the which the world was not worthy. But yet there in the furtherance of that passage, it tells us they continued to walk by faith, no matter what. No matter what. So that's our responsibility as well, to continue to walk by faith, enduring to the end. Now, this isn't necessarily talking about the faithful living, but it is dealing with the faithful service that was ahead of these men. And so, yes, I would absolutely apply it in many other teachings that we would share. Faithful, enduring unto death. The things that are headed your way. When you can't find anything to say, remember God's going to speak through you, He would tell them. Be wise as serpents, harmless as doves. When they don't accept the word, shake the dust off your feet. Enduring unto the end is absolutely necessary. It was for them in this mission, and it is for us in our mission. Knocking doors, not the easiest task in the kingdom. Setting up Bible studies, not the easiest task in the kingdom. And so don't give up. Endure unto the end. For them it was the message, for us it was the message. Verse 23, but when they persecute you in this city, flee ye to another. For verily I say unto you, ye shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man become the true martyr. He didn't go about looking for death. Never made some kind of a display of being a hero. Never failed. But as Jesus did, went humbly before the shearers. As Pilate would press Jesus, at least once, Jesus was perfectly quiet. And so we have to have that kind of peace within us, knowing that we're doing God's will. Notice that we are trying to endure unto the end. Salvation of the soul is what we're aiming for, an eternity with God. Man, what a beautiful passage. A few more verses in this section, but we're out of time today. Got about 3 or 4 minutes left, and So allow me to say thank you for being with us today. Hope the stream went smoothly, the digital end of this. It seemed like it went okay here in the studio, but love you guys very much, and appreciate you being with us on this wonderful, beautiful Friday afternoon. I think it's going to be like 75 degrees today, February the 11th, 75 degrees. Wow, crazy. But anyway, love all y'all. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're one of our local brothers and sisters, we look forward with great anticipation to that first day of the week when we have the opportunity to worship him in spirit and in truth once again, if he wills. Love you very much. Hope you have a great weekend, and hope that even today, this morning, you have a great morning for the Master. We'll be seeing you.